Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with a couple of short articles from Seniors Guide magazine. It comes out quarterly, and this is the first article, Preserve Your Eyesight as You Age. As with the rest of our bodies, our eyes can change due to aging, from simply needing new eyeglass prescriptions to combating conditions such as age-related macular degeneration and glaucoma. We need to take care of this valuable sense. Knowing how to preserve your eyesight as you age can help keep some of the issues at bay. Question. Fortunately, my vision has remained stable for decades. What can I do to help preserve my eyesight as I get older? Answer. Indeed, just getting older increases the risk of vision loss. Aging can trigger several changes in the eyes that increase the risk for certain conditions, such as age-related macular degeneration. In people with this disorder, cells in the macula within the retina no longer function well. Not smoking and eating plenty of green leafy vegetables may help slow down the central vision loss that can occur. Age also increases the risk for glaucoma, damage to the optic nerve that carries visual signals to the brain. Glaucoma is closely linked to abnormally high eye pressure that builds up when the eye's drainage system no longer works properly. Get periodic measurements of the pressure in your eyes. High blood sugar levels can damage blood vessels throughout the body. In the eyes, damaged blood vessels can leak, causing swelling or bleeding in the retina, the light-sensitive tissue responsible for vision, or swelling in the central part of the retina, the macula. Both conditions can lead to vision loss. Keeping blood sugar levels well controlled with diet, exercise, and medication, if needed, helps prevent these complications. High blood pressure, abnormal cholesterol levels, and smoking not only are major risk factors for cardiovascular disease, they also contribute to eye problems. High blood pressure causes wear and tear on blood vessels in the eyes, which makes them more likely to form clots that block blood flow in retinal arteries and veins. High pressure inside these eye vessels also increases the chance they will leak. High levels of LDL, bad cholesterol, also contribute to eye vessel damage and clot formation. Smoking is a risk factor for many eye conditions. It increases inflammation in body and in the eye and acts as an accelerant to any aging or degenerative process in the retina. Smokers are more likely to develop cataracts and macular degeneration. Spending too much time sitting and not remaining physically active increases your risk for diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. Those conditions, in turn, boost your risk for eye disease. The American Academy of Ophthalmology recommends that you get a comprehensive dilated eye exam at age 40, even if you don't have any known eye disease. After that, you'll need a comprehensive eye exam every few years, depending on your health, until you're 65. Then you'll need a screening every year or two, more frequently if you have eye disease. The author of this piece is Howard Lewine, MD, who is an internist at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston and assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. For additional consumer health information, you can visit health.harvard.edu. Now, also from Seniors Guide magazine, types of senior housing. Today's retirement options aren't limited to your grandmother's nursing home of the last century. With the aging of America, the retirement living industry has grown exponentially over the past decade, providing the seniors of today and tomorrow with a vast variety of housing and care options. Senior apartments are apartments designed for older adults who are totally independent but want to live in a home designed for easy living. These communities also typically offer social activities and amenities that cater to a specific age group. Active adult communities are low-maintenance residences often found in planned neighborhoods designed for the 55-plus population. They offer services and amenities aimed at giving residents a more carefree lifestyle, while also providing social engagement opportunities for active adults of all kinds. Independent living refers to a way of life in residential communities designed specifically for those who have reached or are nearing retirement age but want to remain active and independent. Assisted living is a communal way of life designed for seniors who need help with various daily tasks, like grooming, bathing, and medication management, but still wish to remain as independent as possible. Residential care homes, also referred to as family care homes, provide individualized service, often in a standard single-family home. These houses have been modified to accommodate the needs of seniors and are generally licensed by the state for only 2 to 6 beds. Similar to assisted living, residents receive 24-hour care and assistance with activities of daily living, ADLs, including medication management, housekeeping services, transportation to doctor's appointments as needed, meals, and social programs. Then, life planning community, formerly known as a continuing care retirement community, a CCRC, is a community that offers several different senior living options or care levels all on one campus. It provides a peace of mind guarantee of care to residents for the rest of their lives. Respite care is a short-term or temporary care which provides seniors with social engagement and activities while also offering caregivers a break. It can be provided at home, at an adult daycare center, or in a residential community. A long-term care community refers to any community that provides 24-hour care on a long-term basis. Assistance generally includes regular supervision, help with activities of daily living, ADLs, as needed, medication reminders, housekeeping, meals, and social activities. Memory care describes the type of long-term care that helps those with dementia or Alzheimer's disease. Memory care is either offered at a standalone community or as an add-on service at some assisted living facilities, continuing care retirement communities, and nursing homes. Rehabilitation care is a type of temporary, specialized care to help patients regain as much strength, mobility, and function as possible after suffering from an injury, illness, hospital stay, or other life-altering event like a stroke or a fall. It often consists of either physical, occupational, or speech-language therapy, or a combination of all three. And finally, we have skilled nursing facilities, are communities that provide skilled nursing care, a level of care provided by a registered nurse who monitors a patient's health and administers treatments around the clock. And fortunately, here in Raleigh, we have examples of all of those. Now I'm going to switch over to AARP, the Bulletin, and an article that we've started entitled "The War on Diabetes. Science has given us new tools to prevent, control, and even reverse this killer. So why are more and more of us falling ill?" And we had several breakthrough articles. This one is breakthrough number 3. Wearable blood sugar monitors. For 30 years, Alton Matthews pricked his finger 5 to 6 times a day for blood sugar checks. He watched his levels swing up and down depending on what he ate, how carefully he took his medication, and for reasons that seemed like a total mystery. "It was a roller coaster," said the 54-year-old barbecue pit master and the Dog Father's BBQ podcaster from Pflugersville, Texas. Then, in 2020, he tried something new, a continuous glucose monitor, CGM. Attached to his upper arm, this device, about the size of a half-dollar coin, automatically monitors his blood sugar 24/7 and displays results on his smartphone. The CGM changed everything, Matthew said. I see how what I eat and what I do affects my blood sugar levels in real time. If you don't know your numbers, where do you begin the fight? Once used mostly by people with insulin-dependent type 1 diabetes, CGMs are now changing how a growing number of midlife and older adults with type 2 diabetes tame their blood sugar. The devices contain a tiny sensor that measures the glucose in fluid between cells. Readings are transmitted to a smartphone app or a handheld device, where you can instantly see how the breakfast sandwich, ride on your stationary bike, or a great night of sleep is influencing your blood sugar. CGMs are a game changer, said Brown. They change health outcomes in people with diabetes. The insights from having that data can help you make changes without the physical burden of pricking your finger or a blood sugar check. In 2021, a study of 175 midlife and older adults with type 2 diabetes, those wearing a CGM for 8 months, saw a 1.1 percentage point drop in A1C, a reduction that could delay or prevent diabetes complications. CGM users also spent more time in a healthy blood sugar range than those who checked their blood sugar with the conventional finger jabs, drops of blood, and a glucose meter. Researchers are now studying whether the devices can help people with prediabetes stick with healthy changes that prevent or delay type 2. CGMs are more accessible these days. In 2023, Medicare expanded coverage of the devices to include older adults with type 2 diabetes who use even small amounts of insulin or who had low blood sugar episodes with any type of diabetes medication. And in 2024, the FDA approved the sale of CGMs without a prescription. The price tag can top $90 for a one-month subscription, but Brown says using the device for a month could be enough to help someone with prediabetes or whose insurance doesn't cover a CGM for type 2 diabetes, see how food, exercise, sleep, and stress affect their blood sugar and make adjustments. Work with your healthcare practitioner so that you know how to interpret the data, she advises. Now, before we go on to breakthrough number 4 next time, let's look at this sidebar article, Slash Your Diabetes Risk. Diabetes is not inevitable for older adults, says University of Tennessee endocrinologist Dr. Samuel Dagogo Jack. There is plenty you can do to lower your risks. Here are some steps to take now that can impact your future health. Cut risk as much as 25%. Skip the sugary drinks. They make blood glucose skyrocket, causing weight gain and surges of insulin, and ultimately reduce your body's ability to absorb sugar, blood sugar. A 2025 analysis from researchers at Brigham Young University found that every 12-ounce sugary drink per day boosts your existing level of diabetes risk 25%. Cut risk as much as 17%. Kick ultra-processed foods, UPFs, to the curb. Midlife and older Americans get half their calories from UPFs, like sweet and salty snacks, according to a 2024 study. Swapping 10% of daily UPF calories for less processed food reduced diabetes risk 17% in a recent European study that tracked nearly 312,000 people for an average of 10 years. If you're trying to cut back, don't eat lower-calorie UPFs, said Ashley Gerhard, a University of Michigan psychology professor who studies eating disorders, including the addictiveness of junk food. She recommends focusing on real food from Mother Nature with ingredients you can pronounce and having a handful of nuts, some fresh mozzarella, or an apple for a snack. Now, cutting risk as much as 12%. Walk 2,000 steps today. Every 2,000 daily steps lowered type 2 diabetes risk by 12% over nearly 7 years in a University of California San Diego study of 4,838 older women, published in 2022. Moderate intensity walking, fast enough that you could still chat but not sing, was most protective. Muscles contractions help your cells absorb blood sugar, a benefit that persists for approximately 2 days, said Jill Canale, a professor in the Division of Food, Nutrition, and Exercise Sciences at the University of Missouri. You don't need a hard walking program, she says. Just get your muscles moving by walking. Take 5-minute walking breaks from sitting to get started. Now, cut risk as much as 17%. Pick up some weights, up to 60 minutes per week. For example, just doing 3 20-minute strength routines weekly lowered diabetes risk by 17%, according to a 2022 review of studies in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. Cut risk as much as 45%. Go to bed earlier. Skimping on Z's boosted diabetes risk by up to 45%, and irregular bedtimes and wake-up times boosted it 34% in a pair of large studies of midlife and older adults published in 2024. These sleep habits may throw off body clocks that control blood sugar absorption. But that's not all. For people with diabetes, sleep problems can increase stress about taking care of your blood sugar every day, a 2025 Norwegian study found. If you notice ongoing sleep problems, it is worth bringing this up with your healthcare provider, says lead study author Hilde Riese, an associate professor at the Western Norway University of Applied Sciences. Small steps like keeping a regular bedtime, limiting caffeine in the evening, and creating a calm bedtime routine can make a real difference. And finally, cut risk as much as 72%. Lose a little belly fat. If you're carrying extra pounds, dropping as little as 5% of your weight could reduce your risk for progressing from prediabetes to type 2 diabetes by 72%. Losing 8% improved blood sugar for older adults with diabetes in a 2022 study. The key factor? A drop in visceral fat, the deep abdominal kind that boosts inflammation and reduces blood sugar absorption. All right, now let's swing over to AARP, the magazine, and this article, How Old Are You Really? The birthday cards might say you're in your 70s or 80s, but you could be aging faster or slower depending on your lifestyle. Keep score. Answer each question and calculate your real age. You're only as old as you feel. It's a cliche, but it's truer than we know. There's often a disconnect between your chronological age and your biological age. Chronological age is the number of years you have lived in this world. Biological age is the actual age of your body's systems, organs, and cells. It's the rate at which your body has been aging over time, says Zhi He, director of Institute for Successful Longevity at Florida State University, FSU, in Tallahassee. Biological age may be a more reliable marker for predicting how long and how well you're going to live. In a study of nearly 2,000 people around age 70, scientists calculated biological ages based on various aging data. They found that a higher biological age was associated with an elevated risk of mortality and major age-related diseases, including coronary heart disease, diabetes, cancer, stroke, COPD, and dementia. So, what's your true biology age? This series of DIY tests, questions, and diagnostics can help you understand how well and how quickly or slowly you're aging. Plus, we'll outline some changes you can start making now to turn back the clock. Even small shifts can make a big difference in how much pep is in your step in the years to come. Now, here we have another fairly lengthy article, so let's get started on this. 1, and you can keep track of your answers at home. Describe your usual walking pace. Slow, A. B is steady or average, and C is brisk. If you said C, brisk, subtract as many as 14 years for women or 20 years for men from your chronological age. You already know that walking is one of the best ways to get daily exercise, but whether you're just out for a stroll, taking the dog for a walk, or consciously trying to get your steps in, the speed at which you move is critical. People who rated their walking speed as brisk had the longest life expectancy out of nearly 500,000 middle-aged adults studied compared with slow walkers, no matter their body mass index, BMI, according to an analysis in the Mayo Clinic proceedings. Women and men who hoofed it at a brisk pace had a life expectancy of more than 86 and 85 years, respectively. Conversely, those who walked the slowest and also had the lowest BMIs had the lowest life expectancy at roughly 72 years for women and 65 years for men. Walking slowly and having a low BMI is associated with poor fitness and a higher risk of frailty, a combination that doesn't bode well for longevity. Walking is a powerful predictor of good future health, said Ryan McGrath, Director of Healthy Aging, North Dakota, and an associate professor in the Department of Health, Nutrition, and Exercise Sciences at North Dakota State University in Fargo. Staying mobile is important for preserving functional health, he says. More recent research found that having a faster walking pace is linked to lower leukocyte telomeres, the protective ends of caps of chromosomes in your white blood cells, which are commonly referred to as markers of biological age. A brisk pace was even more impactful on telomere length than total physical activity. The takeaway? Make time for higher intensity activities. Research suggests that 10 minutes a day of brisk walking ought to do it. And for extra credit here, this little sidebar, your 70s and beyond, the longevity priorities. Depending on your age group, there are different strategies for healthy aging you can follow, says FSU longevity researcher, Here's what he recommends for people in their 70s and up. To avoid frailty and cognitive decline, maintain muscle mass and strength through physical activity. Stay socially active and intellectually engaged, and work with your doctor to manage chronic conditions. This next section is reminiscent of what we just heard in our other article. How many grams of added sugar from packaged foods do you eat in a typical day? A, less than 48, B, 48 or more. If you answered A, less than 48 grams, subtract 0.2 years from your chronological age. It's easy to identify added sugar. Manufacturers are required to include added sugar grams on all nutrition fact food labels. Excess added sugar is linked to a variety of health problems, such as obesity, type 2 diabetes, and heart disease. But a diet of foods with too much added sugar also damages DNA, causing an acceleration in cellular aging, suggests a study published in 2024 in JAMA Network Open. We're not talking about the naturally occurring sugar in foods like fruits or dairy products. Added sugar refers to any form, including cane sugar, molasses, corn syrup, and many additives ending in OSE, such as sucrose, dextrose, fructose, which have been added to food during processing. These types of sugars are found in foods like candy, soda, desserts, sweetened cereals, yogurts, and non-dairy milks, and condiments like ketchup and barbecue sauce. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, recommends limiting added sugar intake to no more than 48 grams, about 12 teaspoons per day. Now let's look at this article under This is 70, My Happy Place for More Than Six Decades. Some lessons can take on new meaning over many years. This is by Iris Kresnow. 2 weeks after the end of third grade, I left the nest of home, bound for the unknown. It was June of 1963, and my sister Fran and I boarded an overnight train in Chicago, headed to Camp Agawock for Girls in Minocqua, Wisconsin. I spent the next 10 summers there as a camper and counselor. I am now 71. 13 years ago, I returned to my happy place on Blue Lake and resurrected the Camp magazine, where I got my literary start. I've been returning in the years since to edit the magazine, and it has brought back vivid memories. Writing in the woods under an open sky ignited a long-running career as a journalist and author. This is the place I learned to shoot a bow and arrow, swim 6 strokes, portage a canoe in a cold rain, do flips on a trampoline, and slam a serve in a tennis match. Most important, this is the place I learned how to get along with kids far different from me, sleeping in rustic cabins. This is where I learned how to be a good friend. I am one of the many older women who count summer camp as their happy place. I still gather with my cabin mates, and we sing with perfect recollection words of the songs we learned some 60 years ago. We remember the names of campers who dived into the dirt under the legs of the guards to win Capture the Flag for their teams in 1965 and 68. We laugh about how hot dogs and marshmallows charred over campfires tasted better than the arugula and quinoa we eat today. We are a family, bound not of blood, but of history and loyalty. We talk about how our cookouts, canoe trips, and long-standing friendships have infused us with qualities that compose the best of who we are today. Most of all, we credit camp for our ability to persevere after failure. It is our greatest and most enduring gift. As children, we were dwarfed by the big skies and towering pines of Minocqua, yet we emerged at summer's end feeling like robust giants, pushing until we reached a desired goal. Camp makes you feel you can do anything. My camp friends have stuck with me as a chubby child, a skinny bride, over bumps in raising 4 sons and staying married to 1 husband. They have held me up through the sudden death of my father and the long illness of my late mother, and through the recurring sting of an empty nest. It is my good fortune to be in my happiest place and to let young girls write their hearts as I did at their age. I still feel that 8-year-old who wrote this letter home in July of 63. Dear Mommy and Daddy, the nights are cold, the counselors are old, they are not as old as you, but don't worry, I am taking care of myself. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.